This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Anti-nuclear activists the world over rejoiced when more than 120 countries at the United Nations last week formally adopted a treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons. The treaty is strongly worded and requires that signatories, quote, never under any circumstances develop, test, produce, manufacture, otherwise acquire, possess, or stockpile nuclear weapons or other nuclear explosive devices. In September, the UN will formally open the treaty for signatures, and once at least 50 nations have signed on, nuclear weapons prohibition becomes international law. Unsurprisingly, the United States boycotted the treaty adoption process, along with eight other nuclear-armed countries. My guest is Kevin Martin. He is the president of Peace Action, which is the largest U.S. peace and disarmament organization working to abolish nuclear weapons. He now joins me on the phone. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Glad to be with you.
Thanks so much for joining us. How significant is this treaty adoption? 121 countries, I believe, one no, one abstention. Is this something that has been years in the making?
Very much so. And on the one hand, it's very positive in terms of governments, but also non-governmental organizations working together to bring this treaty to fruition, as has been done in the past on things like the International Treaty to Ban Landmines and also cluster munitions. And the fact that you did have 122 countries sign on when the United States and the other nuclear states not only boycotted, but put a lot of pressure on countries not to participate. South Africa has long been one of the leaders pushing for nuclear disarmament. And of course, they have a lot of credibility because they're a country that actually got rid of their nuclear weapon. Their ambassador at the talks at the United Nations said that all of Africa was under heavy pressure not to participate, which is ridiculous. The whole continent of Africa has long been a nuclear weapons-free zone. So the fact that this came to pass with not only the opposition, but really the strenuous lobbying against it by the nuclear states is very significant. The other thing is, this is a vote of no confidence in the U.S. and the other nuclear states who have not lived up to their end of the NPT, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which goes back to 1970. These countries around the world gave up their right to have nuclear weapons, but not saying that the U.S. and the other permanent five nuclear UN Security Council members could keep their nukes forever, that they were supposed to be getting rid of their nukes. And they haven't lived up to that end of the bargain. So that's since 1970. So it was a vote of sort of no confidence in that process.
Now, in 2009, President Obama, newly elected and inaugurated, gave a historic speech in Prague about his position on nuclear weapons. He was very strong and eloquent about the need to abolish nuclear weapons. What happened after that speech? How strongly did Obama push the U.S. to start getting rid of its nuclear weapons, if anything?
Well, first of all, he said that perhaps getting rid of nuclear weapons wouldn't happen in his lifetime, which to me, that undercuts the seriousness of the commitment right there. Think of any other issue. If you said, wow, we want quality education for every child in America, but perhaps not in my lifetime, people would say you're not serious, right?
So I think so a lot of people sort of heard what they wanted to hear in that speech then.
Exactly, exactly. And that was true with a lot of things with President Obama. He did some good things. There was the modest New START treaty with Russia that cut the deployed strategic nuclear weapons by about a third, but we still have 1,550 on each side. There were the nuclear security summits to lock down nuclear materials, and then there was the very important nuclear agreement with Iran. So those were good. But overall, it still has to be a disappointment, especially the so-called bargain to get the Senate ratifying the New START Treaty was the beginning of a so-called modernization program. And we shouldn't call it modernization. We should call it a new arms race, $1 trillion or probably more over the next 30 years to completely upgrade the U.S. nuclear weapons complex. And predictably, all of the other eight nuclear states have followed suit. So what really has happened is that President Obama's policies have encouraged nuclear proliferation rather than discouraged it. And you certainly see that in the case of North Korea, which is such a concern right now.
Right. In fact, so last week, North Korea tested an anti-ballistic intercontinental ACBM. I can't even get the acronym there, but that was, of course, pretty worrying. Unfortunately, with the person in charge in our country, that there's a big fear of that escalating rather than de-escalating. How does that fit into the conversations that took place at the UN last week in ahead of adopting this treaty?
Right. And I do have to point out there is some controversy about the intelligence that it might not have been an ICBM. It might have been an intermediate range missile. It's still worrisome. And I don't think North Korea or any country should be developing nuclear weapons or missiles. But there is some controversy about how long, what would be the range of that missile? Could it maybe hit Alaska or Hawaii or the continental United States? They're nowhere near able to do that, especially with a miniaturized warhead. But they could be within the next few years. So it certainly is of concern. In terms of how that deals with this UN treaty that 122 countries signed on to, that won't get rid of a single nuclear weapon in the next day or two or year or two or three or who knows. It's setting an international standard and an international norm that nuclear weapons are illegal, they're against humanitarian law, they're immoral, and it's up to those of us, particularly that live in the nuclear weapon states, to give some legs to this and use this as an international norm that nuclear weapons are unacceptable and need to be abolished just as chemical weapons and biological weapons, et cetera. And on North Korea, there are specific dynamics that the United States, South Korea, Japan, China, et cetera, need to get with North Korea on negotiations, which I think is very possible, particularly with the new president of South Korea, who's reviving the Sunshine Policy and wants to negotiate with the North. And it wouldn't be hard, and North Korea has actually signaled that they might be willing to do this, to freeze their nuclear program and missile program, not get rid of them, but initially freeze them, if the United States and South Korea would cancel our very provocative war game.
Right.
And those war games involve 300,000 troops, and also they involve a simulated nuclear attack on North Korea. So you can see why North Korea would be very worried about those war games.
Now, in March of this year, when talks were ongoing around the nuclear treaty, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, said in her sort of justification for why it's okay to boycott these talks, boycott this treaty process, she said, "We have to be realistic. Is there anyone who thinks that North Korea would ban nuclear weapons?" Is this a red herring? I mean, the U.S. and Russia are the two top nuclear stockpilers in the world. If the U.S. were to take the lead, smaller countries might be much more likely to follow, right?
Very much so. The United States and Russia still have something like 93% of the world's nuclear stockpile. So we're the main problem. And again, it's not just maintaining them. The fact that under Obama, not under Trump, this program of over 30 years to totally upgrade and overhaul our nuclear weapons complex, the whole complex, from the research laboratories to missiles to planes to submarines to bombs themselves. And every other country, again, the other eight nuclear states, again, just to say that, are doing it. So it's not just what we maintain. It's that we're actually going in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. North Korea actually is probably a solvable problem. They're not crazy. They're not irrational or illogical. They are faced with a huge alliance of the United States, South Korea, and Japan that is overwhelmingly much more powerful militarily, economically, and, of course, has nuclear weapons. But even the South Korean president now talks about denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. And anything like that would start with a first step. So we need to be talking to, and I think the South Korean president needs to take the lead on this, not President Trump, talking to North Korea, again, about at least a freeze or a pause. Now, there's more that North Korea wants, official peace treaty to end the Korean War. Since 1953, we're technically still at a state of war because there's only been an armistice that's supposed to be a temporary armistice. China, but also North Korea, don't like the deployment of so-called THAAD, which is an anti-missile system that the United States is putting into South Korea. That is seen as very provocative. So there are things that we can put on the table to negotiate. And I actually do think it would be possible within a few years to at least freeze and roll back North Korea's nuclear weapons program, and maybe to actually get rid of their nuclear weapons program if the United States, South Korea, Japan, et cetera, and China get on board with a program that would be really about peace and eventually peaceful reunification of the Korean Peninsula. But you don't have to swallow that all at once. You can take this, you know, a step at a time. Part of the I was just going to say to finish up, part of what people are really concerned about is why the United States doesn't want that, is we want the freedom to dominate the Asia-Pacific region militarily. And that certainly is a huge concern for both China and Russia. So a lot of people say it's not just about the Korean Peninsula, it's that the United States wants to, the so-called Asia pivots that was done under Obama, that we want to be able to have military dominance all throughout the Asia-Pacific region.
Well, the other countries that boycotted the talks, in addition to the U.S. and Russia, the two countries with the vast majority of nuclear weapons, were Britain, China, France, India, Pakistan, Israel, and of course North Korea. So basically, all of the countries in the world that do have nuclear weapons, who should be the ones participating in these talks and signing this treaty, are precisely the ones that have chosen not to. So how much teeth does this treaty have? Presumably, most of the 121 nations that voted to adopt the treaty will sign on to it, but they're not the ones with the nuclear weapons to begin with.
Right. And you can take a sort of cynical view and say, well, all these countries are already prohibited by the NPT, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation
Right.
Treaty. They're already prohibited from having nuclear weapons. So why would they sign this treaty? I think a couple important points there. Again, what I said earlier, it's sort of a vote of no confidence in the U.S. and the other nuclear weapon states because we haven't lived up to our end of the bargain on the NPT to move towards nuclear disarmament. Also, one of the things is sometimes you can look at the political dynamics of this. If this were unimportant, why were the United States and Britain and France lobbying so heavily their allies against this? Even the procedural vote last fall that you mentioned to proceed with these negotiations, and that vote happened while President Obama was still in office, not President Trump. We were arguing and arm-twisting and lobbying viciously for countries not to participate, and including what I said earlier about all the countries of Africa, even though Africa is already a nuclear weapons free zone. So clearly the U.S. and the other nuclear states do feel that this is a threat. They feel threatened that they're going to be seen now as pariahs. And again, not only that they continue to have nuclear weapons, but they're all moving in the opposite direction to upgrade and overhaul and improve their nuclear weapons arsenal. So again, this treaty doesn't get rid of a single nuclear weapon today. It establishes an international norm. And you can say that the U.S. is out of step with the wisdom of the world, just like we are, not we, I shouldn't say we, like Trump is, with withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accord.
Right,
now,
exactly.
There you have a higher consensus of governments around the world that climate change is real. You don't have as high a consensus, but you still have, it's not just 122 countries, it's all the rest of the world's countries other than the nuclear nine, plus a few countries that are either nuclear threshold states or under the so-called nuclear umbrella or close allies of the U.S., so the NATO countries, Japan, et cetera. Now, the Japanese people want to get rid of nuclear weapons, but their government doesn't. So that's part of the issue here is do the governments that insist on hanging on to their nuclear weapons really have public or popular support for that? For the most part, they don't, but it's incumbent on us that live in these states to put pressure on our governments to move towards nuclear disarmament.
And we know that Donald Trump has, like so many other issues, he is completely inexperienced on how to run a government. And in the past, he has made statements like, well, why do we have nuclear weapons if we aren't going to use them? Which is an extremely dangerous thing to just even say out loud. So presuming that under a Trump administration, we would never sign on to a treaty, is it possible that a future president, somebody less unstable, somebody more reasonable, seeing the writing on the wall, seeing the pressure from the world's nations, might sign on to this treaty at a later date? And is that something that your organization and grassroots groups in the U.S. can push future leaders to do that?
I think so, but also you can't divorce nuclear weapons. Even though nuclear weapons are a horrible threat, and that not just Trump, any president has the power to initiate a nuclear war that could wipe out all life on the planet, including species that have had no say about this, right? You can't divorce nuclear weapons from the overall U.S. militarism. And let's say right now nuclear weapons were wiped off the face of the earth, the United States would actually probably be in a stronger position militarily because of our gargantuan, overwhelming military superiority. We spend about 40% of the world's total spending on military. And of course, that hurts us domestically because it means we're not spending money on healthcare, on building jobs in the economy, on the green economy, on education, et cetera. So that hurts us right now in terms of our overall military budget. But it also encourages other countries to hang on to their nukes. If you just look at Russia, the United States actually wanted to go farther in terms of disarmament or arms control or cuts with Russia, but because of NATO expansion, missile defense, post-Cold War triumphalism, and isolating Russia, and I'm not excusing Putin or Russia's militarism either, but because of all that, Russia is more dependent on their nukes, so they're less likely to get rid of their nukes. What does this all mean? If you really want to simplify it, your tax dollars and mine are promoting U.S. foreign and military policies that encourage nuclear proliferation, in other words, make us less safe. So nuclear weapons are a unique threat to life on Earth, but they can't be divorced from overall U.S. militarism.
Well, Kevin, we are, two and a half or 3 minutes away from midnight on the doomsday clock. A lot of that has to do with nuclear weapons proliferation, with Putin and Trump meeting for the first time at the G20 in the last few days. Is there any sense that you have that these two major nations can feel the pressure? What keeps you hopeful as in your position as president of Peace Action?
People rising up and demanding what's right. I don't put trust in politicians. What gives me hope is things like the Women's March, the Science March, the Climate March, where we link climate and peace concerns. People getting off the couch and getting active and demanding peace and social justice. And you're seeing that a lot of that is sort of a response to Trump because he's so frightening for a lot of people. It's been less around peace issues than it has been around racial justice or environmental justice or social justice or economic justice or healthcare issues. But we link those issues, and a lot of people, especially at the grassroots, do link those issues because we're not going to have peace and justice if we don't rearrange our priorities away from nuclear weapons, away from foreign bases around the world, away from the endless wars that we're engaged in. We need to resolve all those things and move towards peace so that we can invest in our country and around the world in social justice. And I think people are waking up to that, even if it takes somebody as onerous as Trump to wake people up. And that's what gives me hope. I don't particularly care about the personal relationship between Trump and Putin. I think they may have some realistic chances to work together on some priorities that the U.S. and Russia share. But in the long run, it's going to be the people of this country and other countries, including England, where I think they have the best chance to get rid of their nuclear weapons. Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour leader, who may well be the prime minister soon, is very committed to getting rid of nuclear weapons. But that's because he's been part of the movement, not just because he's a smart guy. People's movements are always what give me hope. That's the only thing that ever changes anything.
Kevin, give out a website for Peace Action where people can find out more about the work you do.
Sure. It's peace-action.org.
Peace-action.org. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
My guest is Kevin Martin. He's the president of Peace Action, the largest U.S. peace and disarmament organization working to abolish nuclear weapons in this country. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.